living in. Let me tell ya. And it's a world that man can eat at all. When things are big, that should be small. Who can tell what magic spells we'll be doing for us?
Welcome to the Progressive Union. I am your host, Doreen DiLeonardo, broadcasting to you from New York City on Third Strike Radio. We report the news the corporate media ignores. Joining me for this hour with you is my husband and co-host, Tony DiLeonardo. Hello there, Tony.
Hi, dear.
I think we misplaced something this week. Oh! A big, ginormous plane. Where is it? I can't find it anywhere. A 777.
Malaysian Airlines Flight 370 disappeared with 239 souls aboard. It's a Boeing 777.
A lot of sevens.
I think I said that right. Yeah,
yeah, it's a Boeing.
Seven is supposed to be a lucky number. Three of them are supposed to be a lottery win, but
apparently not for those 230.
Not this time.
Yeah.
And after a week of speculation.
11 days, actually.
11
it's up to
days?
11
it's been
days
that long.
Now. Yes.
11 days of speculation on where this airliner is and the fate of the passengers.
And what happened.
We have a quick guest who needs no introduction, and he's going to offer his theory on what happened to this airliner.
Our expert is clip number one.
Get a load of this, folks. It says here, a constant menace to pilots are the gremlins who wreck planes with their diabolical sabotage. Gremlins. Oh, murder. Gremlins. What a fairy tale. Little man. Oh, brother.
So that was our expert. Our expert was Bugs Bunny, of course. But he's just about as smart as the other people that are on the TV that are speculating about everything, and they don't really know anything. Nobody knows anything. The story changes every day. They don't find nothing. This is a big plane. They can't find anything.
No, nothing.
Not a clue. Not a wing.
Not a wing floating on the surf like an abandoned surfboard. Nothing.
Not a thing. It's like the biggest disappearance since Amelia Earhart. Maybe bigger. It's a bigger plane.
Earhart was one dame, huh?
Right, one dame. These are 230 people.
Yes.
There were two little kids on the plane.
They
too.
Tried That's everything. They tried. The pilots had some kind of connection, and they started with the Iranian guys with the Italian stolen
passports, right.
Flying from Malaysia. How do you make this connection?
I don't know. They were just unlucky crooks, I think. They just got caught up in the whole whatever it is that happened. Now they think that it was done by remote control, and it was already diverted the path of the plane before they even left the runway. So now we're hearing all this stuff, and it kind of sounds kind of hacking, like hacking into, you know, what the plane's going to do, which is really quite uncomfortable. I mean, we're joking about it. You know, we're putting a little humor into the story, but I think it makes people uncomfortable, and I think it's why people are talking about this story a little more than the story about Ukraine, which we'll get to a little bit later. Because this one, we all have gotten on a plane at some time or another in our lives. We haven't been on the plane in a long time.
San Francisco was on
that
time.
But in my lifetime, I've definitely been on planes often, and I've taken some long, long
and
trips.
The minute the bar was open, who had a drink?
I did, for sure. So did you.
Yeah.
And I've taken Valium being on planes. I mean, I don't like to fly.
Let's face it. The minute you leave the ground, anything can happen.
You're vulnerable. You have no control
exactly
of what's going to happen. So nobody knows. Nobody knows. So now they're even saying that maybe it landed. Boeing is involved now, that they pay no taxes, but they know everything. Boeing is saying that it could have landed in Pakistan, the border of Pakistan and Afghanistan, where the Taliban is, apparently. So that's, it could have landed there, and they have a lot of runways that could accommodate that kind of plane.
Yeah, but
so that's the new theory of speculation.
If it did land there, and these people were being held against their will by the Taliban, wouldn't the Taliban have made any kind of ransom demands by now?
You would think they would have. I don't know. Maybe
what are they going to do with these 230 people?
But maybe they like it. Maybe it's fun for them. Maybe they like seeing all of us running. Listen, if you...
Honey, these are people that take videos of them sawing people's heads off.
I understand that.
They like the recognition. Holding a big plane with 230 people on board, and they want people to know they did it.
Well, maybe they're not ready yet. Maybe they have more things planned.
What more could they have planned than this?
Maybe.
What's next?
I don't know, hiding a skyscraper. I have
no
idea.
What's next? They're going to hijack an ocean liner now?
We're speculating now.
Well, we also have a second guest who is also going to offer his theory. He's a gentleman who needs no introduction.
And this will be clip number 2.
You're traveling through another dimension. A dimension not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of imagination. That's the signpost up ahead. Your next stop, the Twilight Zone. You're riding on a jet airliner en route from London to New York. You're at 35,000 feet atop an overcast and roughly 55 minutes from Idlewild Airport. But what you've seen occur inside the cockpit of this plane is no reflection on the aircraft or the crew. It's a safe, well-engineered, perfectly designed machine. And the men you've just met are a trained, cool, highly efficient team. Problem is simply that the plane is going too fast, and there is nothing within the realm of knowledge or at least logic to explain it. Unbeknownst to passenger and crew, this aeroplane is heading into an uncharted region, well off the beaten track of commercial travelers. It's moving into the Twilight Zone. What you're about to see, we call the Odyssey of Flight 33.
Of course, that was an episode from the Twilight Zone. For our younger viewers, I don't know if some people don't know what the Twilight Zone is, but...
That episode is 2 years older than we are.
I know, it's scary. That's a... It's old.
That episode was aired in 1961.
Shh, you just told people.
What?
Well, we don't know where the plane is, but we know how old and fossilized we are.
Do I care if I know people how old people are? That is a very popular, that is a very famous episode, especially when the pilots looked out the window when they saw the Brontosaurus looking up at them like, hello. Smile for the birdie.
So who knows where this plane is? Maybe they're looking. They're in another dimension.
Maybe.
Like the Twilight Zone. Maybe. Maybe they're on Fantasy Island.
Is that clip number 3, Bob?
Well, it might be. If anybody remembers that show, it was from the 70s, where the little guy, what was his name?
Tattoo.
But his real name.
The late Hervé Villechaize.
Right, he was a midget, and he was on...
Excuse me, little person.
He was a little person, and he was with the Ricardo Montalban, who was the guy that ran the... what was his name? He was the one that ran the island
Oh, you know, I can't even remember his character's name.
I can't think
name.
Of his name.
I know he wore the white suit.
Yeah, but every week they had different guests that would come and land on this little plane on this island, and they would stay there, and some magical thing would happen to them. I mean, every week, and it was always, like, famous people that were on TV shows and so forth.
Well, if you want to go that far, we could also about Lost.
It could be Lost. It could be Planet of the Apes. We could go on and on. Where is the damn plane? Enough already. This is the thing that makes me crazy, because there was another story in the news before you do more on... You have more on the plane?
Yes, I do.
Okay. But the thing that makes me a little bit crazy, I only wish, crazy, is that they have all the surveillance now. We have drones. We have the NSA listening to us. Everybody knows what you Google. Everybody knows what you like, what you want to buy before you even want to know you want to buy it. I mean, they know everything. They see your emails, your text messages. Supposedly, they're watching everything we do. Are they not watching the planes? I find this hard to believe. It seems to be crazy. Some of my job said, oh, well, other countries do things in a different way. No, I don't think so. How is that possible? How is that possible that, like, the sky is not watched over? How is it possible? Wouldn't we have planes, like, crashing into each other if the skies weren't monitored properly, right? Mm-hmm. Aren't there planes flying all over the place? Now we're adding drones, by the way, by, like, 2015. They're going to get, like, specific airspace. They're going to be allocated because there's going to be that many drones in the air. Which leads me to Dianne Feinstein from California. And she has been a very good friend to the NSA. She was saying, you
know. Until now.
Well, because now it affects her. And she's very upset because she has folks, she has a committee that's been investigating the whole torture regime during the Bush-Cheney or Cheney-Bush, however you want to look at it, presidency. And they were just about to issue this report, which I'm sure wasn't going to be complimentary. And all of a sudden, she found out that her employees, or the people working with her, were being spied on by the CIA, what they were looking at, and that some of the documents they were looking at, they weren't supposed to look at. But meanwhile, she said, well, how dare you spy on me? She got upset. And then after this...
What? Is this a surprise to her?
I guarantee, no, but she doesn't like it.
I guarantee her our little homegrown...
I don't think we're not being spied on any more than anybody else is. Everybody's being spied on. That's my point. My point is they're supposed to be like watching us and listening to us and monitoring us, and there's drones. She had a drone outside her window. She was all mad about it. She hates drones. You like the spying on your phone and your computer, that's okay, but the drone in front of your house, because Code Pink was in front of her house. She was on 60 Minutes.
What do these drones look like?
They're like little, actually you could buy a drone. If you go to Amazon.com and you type in drone, you can buy one. They're like a little robot, like a little airborne robot that can take pictures. Some of them can take pictures like way above your, way above the earth and get pictures of you in your house.
I'll give them something to post. I'll even post for them.
I'm sure you will, Tony. I'm sure you'll give them an eyeful. Then they'll have something they'll be that people will actually want our detail, because you'll make it so much fun for them. They'll be like, well, those old people are boring. I want to tune into Mr. T. Leonardo. But anyway, she's such a hypocrite, because you see, when it affects you, you don't like it so much. All of a sudden, keeping us safe, oh, you don't like the drones? And she thinks they should be regulated more? So, I forget who was interviewing her in 60 Minutes. And
because
he's like,
maybe they caught her... Maybe they caught her gratifying herself.
Tony!
You never know.
Tony, please. Tony!
Oh, I left the window open.
Tony!
Oh, my God!
God! But
what is that looking in my
seriously,
window?
Seriously, he was
That's
saying...
That's not an owl.
Seriously, she was so upset. And Oops. The journalist kept saying to her, you find that more offensive than people reading all your emails, listening to you on the phone, looking at your searches, all of that, like, that's okay. But she doesn't like the drones, and she was annoyed about, like, you know, her staff. She's so, such a hypocrite, and she's a Democrat.
That was the one who went up in the plane on Air Force One to talk to Bush. And she came off the plane pale-faced, and she was like, oh, it was such an eye-opening experience.
Yeah, her husband's also a contractor. Yeah,
they probably were holding her in the companionway and threatening to throw her out unless they got what they wanted.
Tony!
And that's why she came back all...
So dramatic.
Who knows what happened up
there? I don't know, but her husband's a contractor, so he benefits from a lot of these laws. But anyway, I just found it interesting that she was complaining about that, and nobody can find this plane. It seems insane to me. I'm really sorry, but I feel like we know where the plane is because it can't possibly be lost. It's too big. I refuse to believe that. It's ridiculous. And comments like other countries do things different. I don't buy that either. Because we would have plane crashes every day if they couldn't follow the planes and know where they are. Doesn't that make sense?
That's why you have your air traffic controllers.
There you go. So what do you got there, Tony?
Okay, this is about Amelia Earhart, and it ties into...
today's story?
Well, yes, about the
speculative aeroplane. Lost plane.
Associated Press. The plane must be somewhere, but the same can be said for Amelia Earhart's. 10 days after Malaysia Airlines Flight 370 disappeared with 239 people aboard, an exhaustive international search has produced no sign of the Boeing 777, raising an unsettling question. What if the airplane is never found? Could be possible. Such an outcome, while considered unlikely by many experts, would certainly torment the families of those missing. It would also flummox the airline industry, which will struggle to learn lessons from the incident if it doesn't know what happened. While rare nowadays, history is not short of such mysteries. From the most famous of all, American aviator Earhart, to planes and ships disappearing in the so-called Bermuda Triangle. When something like this happens that confounds us, we're offended by it and we're scared by it, said Rick Gillespie, a former U.S. aviation accident investigator who wrote a book about Earhart's still unsolved 1937 disappearance over the Pacific Ocean. We had the illusion of control, and it's just been shown to us that, oh folks, you know what, a really big airliner can just vanish and nobody wants to hear that.
No, of course not. How about the families of the people that are lost?
Part of the problem, said Andrew Thomas, the editor-in-chief of the Journal of Transportation Security, is that airline systems are not as sophisticated as many people might think.
Oh.
And this is why I'm reading this. A case in point, he said, is that airports and airplanes around the world use antiquated radar tracking technology first developed in the 1950s. Rather than the modern GPS systems. A GPS system might not have solved the mystery of Flight 370, which disappeared March 8th while flying from Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia to Beijing, but it would probably have given researchers a better read on the plane's last known location, Thomas said. There are lots of reasons why they haven't changed, but the major one is cost, he said. The next generation technology would cost $70 to $80 billion in the U.S. of A. Experts say that the plane's disappearance will likely put pressure on airlines and governments to improve the way they monitor planes, including handoff procedures between countries. Flight 370 vanished after it signed off with Malaysian air traffic controllers and never made contact with their Vietnamese counterparts.
Yeah, there was no handoff. Yep. There was no handle.
And if the plane is never found, liability issues will be a huge headache for courts. With no wreckage, it would be difficult to determine whether the airline, manufacturers, or other parties should bear the brunt of the responsibility.
Oh, man, because they won't
You
know
mean
why
to
it
tell
happened.
Me they don't have GP? They have GPSs in my sanitation truck.
They don't have them for the planes.
To try to locate us during snowstorms and where we are. God forbid you stop for a cup of coffee because you have one eye open. You'll have four foreman's cars rolling up on you like a SWAT team. What are you doing here? But they don't have it in airliners.
Nope. Everything's falling apart. You realize that,
right?
That's
why I read that. Because when I read it, I see the irony of it.
It is ironic. It's ridiculous. Listen, our phones have GPS in it. That's why they know where we are. Our phones have GPS, right? Our yes. little cell phones. Our cell phones can do everything. Probably more tracking in those cell phones than you have in an airplane. That's really mind-boggling.
That's why I read it. That's and why I wanted our listeners to. I don't. How many people out there don't know?
I didn't.
That the GPS.
I didn't.
I thought they had GPSs in these planes. I know they have the transponders.
So this is a good reason to go to Colorado and roll a fat joint, because the stories this week are a little bit too much. Colorado made roughly $2 million in marijuana taxes in January alone. State revenue officials reported Monday in the world's first accounting of recreational pot business. The tax toll reported by the State Department of Revenue indicates that $14.2 million worth of recreational pot was sold from 59 businesses. People are really getting stoned. I love it. The state collected roughly $2.01 million in taxes. They legalized pot in 2012, but the commercial sale of marijuana did not begin until January. Washington State sales begin in the coming months. I'm going to tell you. 18 states you can get medical marijuana. Marijuana is going to be legal, I think, in less than 2 years. I'll say 3 on the outside in every state. Because you cannot ignore the money. That's how alcohol became legal, because of taxes. That's how they twisted the arms of the conservatives and they took it out of the hands of organized crime. So marijuana being legal changes a lot of things. A lot of people that are in jail right now, especially people of color, it's because of small little bags of marijuana. The drug war that goes on in Mexico and all the things that go on the border, marijuana. So marijuana becomes
legal.
No,
I think that's more. That's not just marijuana.
Marijuana is a big business, though, for them.
But that's really heavy duty.
Some of it is
stuff.
But it's a big deal. If it can just stay out of the hands of the pharmaceutical companies and stay exactly the way it is, it's a big deal, a huge deal. But I think right now everybody needs to get a little high, because between this and the story in the Ukraine and the things we're going to talk about in the bottom half of the show, I think everybody really needs to sit back and...
Everybody must get stoned.
I think we would prescribe that, that everybody gets stoned. You can't even get on a train now. Metro North, those big trains provider here in New York, all over, upstate, Long Island, Westchester, Westchester and upstate, not Long Island. Long Island is Long Island Railroad. They did a study because we had an issue with a train derailment and crash. And guess what?
That's because the guy hit the turn too fast.
Right. Well, apparently they're much more concerned in being on time than safety. So it's not even safe to get on a train anymore. So bad on Metro North. So don't get in a plane.
Honey,
and don't get on a train.
You can get hit just crossing the street.
Well, that's true. Oh, please. We have that problem here. Right here, right near where we live. There's people always get hit by cars over there. It's very dangerous. It's a dangerous world we live in. We have to just stay home. We're just stay home and listen to the Progressive Union. That's the safest bet.
Then people are really going to have to get stoned.
Yeah, they really are going to have to go up and smoke. You have another story before the break?
This is kind of a long one.
All right, so maybe we'll save it for the other half. We'll save
it. And it has to do with fans of the Untouchables and... The famed lawman, Elliot Nash.
Oh, so we'll do that after the break. I'm just gonna warn people. Is that your Sean Connery that you were just doing?
I'm trying to.
I like it.
Yeah.
All right, this is really scary. All right. If it wasn't scary enough the week, this is even scarier. Remember Scott Brown? Remember Scott Brown took Ted Kennedy's seat in the Senate.
Vaguely.
And then Scott Brown had to run against Elizabeth Warren, and she crushed him.
No,
right?
She didn't crush him.
She beat him.
She beat him, but not...
You want me to get the numbers and what the percentage? She didn't crush him?
She didn't spank him, which she should have.
I don't know about that. I'll have to look that up later. She spanked him, but...
As much as Scott Brown wanted to be spanked.
He probably would have liked to have been spanked. But Scott Brown said all through the campaign, I'm from Massachusetts. I would be your senator. I'm from Massachusetts. He would repeat that over and over
Where's
and over.
Where is he from?
Well, he is from Massachusetts, but he also has a home in New Hampshire. So now he wants to be your senator from New Hampshire.
Yeah, he figured he crapped out one state. Mm-hmm.
they're very excited, the Republican Party, and the Democrats are not excited at all.
Because New Hampshire is more, I think it's more right-leaning.
No, they vote for Democrats. I don't think they're going to buy it. He just ran for, in Massachusetts. I don't know if they're going to buy the whole I'm now from New Hampshire thing. I have no idea, but I know the Democrats are really nervous, and they're nervous in general right now because there's
it's like Bobby Bonilla when he signed with the Mets in 1992 as a free agent.
Where was he from?
He's from New York.
Oh.
He was a Pirate, and then he made the rounds, the Phillies, the White Sox, and then, you know, he was using them to pump up the fee for the Mets, and then the Mets paid him $5 million a year. He bombed out. But he gets in the press, and he's like, well, I always wanted to be a Met. I always wanted to play in New York. Then why did you go to the Phillies and the White Sox first?
There you go. I mean, you really can't argue
that. And that's why the New York press and the New York fans never embraced him, because they knew he was full of it.
So that can happen with him, because there's clips of him saying, I'm from Massachusetts. I'm a Massachusetts boy. All that stuff. Over and over and over again. He repeated it over and over again. Both times, I think he was put into the position after Kennedy. I don't know if he ran against anyone. I don't remember if he was appointed because Kennedy died. I think he might have been appointed. I'm not really sure. But anyway, he always said that he was a boy from Massachusetts and that was his state and his home and all this other stuff. Now you're going to turn around. If I was doing ads against him and I was running against him, I would just do all that. I would rerun all that saying he's from Massachusetts. Done. Finished. Over. That's it. I don't know why the Democrats get nervous. They're nervous right now because of the Koch brothers. They're nervous right now because they're getting challenged because the right wing, well, the Koch brothers have so much money and they're like pounding them. So they're really nervous about that. Obama's organizing for America. They're not really helping any of the candidates. I don't know why. They're afraid of the president because the president's approval rating is low, so they don't want to be appearing with him. And you know what? I keep thinking about Joe Biden. A few weeks ago, Joe Biden spoke to the Democrats. I forget it. I think it was congressional Democrats. And he said, there's no reason to be worried about the next election, because everything we are for, the American people are for. And he went down the list of all the things and percentages of people that, for each specific subject that we are for. Workers' rights, women rights, you know, environmental, you know, protection, all these things. And he said, we are on the right side of every issue, and the American people are with us.
Then where there's some dummies, when they get into the voting booth, they vote the other way.
Well, that always happens, but they have to own it. That's my thing.
I swear to God, some of these people, they get in the voting booth, and it's like they're driving drunk all of a sudden.
Well, that's true.
They drive the wrong way, and they hit the guardrail. It's like, how did this happen?
But when you have a weak message, which they do, and they're not proud of what they stand for, and they don't understand that the people actually are for the things they're for, because if you point them out like he did, one by one, point by point, because, you know, he wants to run for president, so he's trying to look very strong, and he is. And when you hear Joe Biden say it, you're like, well, why do you feel weak? Run on who you are. Don't be worried about it so much. Don't worry about the Koch brothers and their money. Because you know what? The Koch brothers' money has always existed. It existed in the past two election cycles, and we have Obama as president, regardless of their money. So they really should. I know Obamacare is not perfect. I know because I've been dealing with it. In our community, I had a speaker come to one of our clubs. I mean, I'm really trying to help people sign up. I know it's not perfect, but at least we do have something now. People cannot be without health insurance. We're trying. And
I went without health insurance for
a long time, right?
For 3 years. I was scared to death.
Yeah,
I didn't have any.
That's not good.
Dangerous. And I had a very physical job at the time. And I said, well, something happens,
you're in trouble.
I'm in a lot of trouble.
And I've been trying to help people, like sign up and tell them, please don't go without health insurance. And I think over time it is going to improve. Listen, those same people that complain about it, they didn't want to have socialized medicine. They're like, oh, we don't want a Medicare. We don't want socialized medicine.
And let me be honest with you. When I was working downtown, I mean, my policy, I thought it was a junk policy.
When a lot of them were.
It was, I think, Apple Healthcare.
That's a junk policy.
When was the last time you heard about Apple Healthcare?
There are a lot of them.
That went the way of the Edsel.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people that we know that, oh, my policy was dropped, that's because they don't meet the minimum criteria of giving actual health care. That's why it was a cheap plan. And people think it was a good plan because until you use your health insurance and you actually, you know, have an illness or you get sick, you don't really know what you have. You just don't know. You don't use it. You just go for some wellness visits and that's it. Until you really have to use it, that's when the test of that plan.
You know what the problem is, like, shown. A lot of people, they don't go to the, I go once every 6 months. You take the blood, you get the flu shots, you get the necessary, I have to actually make an exam.
Stress test.
I have to make an appointment for an x-ray. I haven't had one of those in a year and a half, 2 years, mm-hmm. just in case some little baby alien is growing inside of me. It's getting ready to break out.
Maybe a gremlin.
Maybe.
Maybe. But you never, people but don't know.
It's maintaining. Now, if you catch something in time, it's going to be a lot less taxing on your wallet and your,
your health as well.
Your health itself. I mean, sure. It's going to be a lot less, you know, a lot less stressful.
Of course it is for everybody considered. But if you don't have insurance, you don't go and you don't check.
Speaking of stress, I need a break. It's been a half an hour.
Well, we are actually... Oh, Tony, we don't want to overwork you.
I'm going to run out to Colorado and score.
Yeah. Bring some back for me. Okay, we are going to take a break. When we come back, we are going to have a story.
Hi, this is Alex Archer from The Green Living Show. Green Living is the show for Build a Better Planet, a nonprofit organization promoting sustainability. Join us each week as we learn how to live healthier, better lives. You'll learn the latest in green trends, you'll hear from green experts, and you'll learn great organic recipes from our very own Chef Yvette. And you'll get to hear the greatest, latest indie music from progressive musicians and bands from around the world. Join us on Green Living here on ThirdStrikeRadio.com.
You are listening to the Progressive Union on ThirdStrikeRadio.com.
Progressive Union, we are back. I am your host, Doreen DeLeonardo, and I share this program every week with my husband, Tony DeLeonardo. I just wanted to remind everybody you can podcast the show on iTunes. Go to News and Politics and type in The Progressive Union, and you can take Tony and I to go. You can follow us on Twitter and like us on Facebook.
Take me to go. I come cheap.
Tony, you don't come cheap.
All right, for all you Untouchable fans out there, whether the Robert Stack TV show, which I don't even know how many of you remember that show, or the movie with Kevin Costner and Sean Connery as Jimmy Malone, this is out of the Associated Press in Chicago. In the pantheon of Chicago crime fighters, nobody has had the worldwide reputation of Elliot Ness. He's the prohibition agent who brought down Al Capone, the principal lawman in a city awash in corruption, the relentless investigator portrayed by actors Robert Stack and Kevin Costner, and the legend who is said to have inspired comic strip Detective Dick Tracy. That I didn't know. That's a new one on me. Nearly six decades after his death, Ness is still so admired that the Illinois two U.S. senators want to name a federal building after him in Washington, D.C. But a Chicago alderman, citing a recent Capone biography, concludes that Ness had about as much to do with putting the gangster behind bars as Mrs. O'Leary's cow had to do with starting the Great Chicago Fire.
Get out of here. So that movie isn't true?
And he's trying to convince the senators to drop the whole idea. There are literally hundreds of heroic law enforcement officials who would be deserving of the honor, but Elliot Ness is simply not one of them. I've heard, been hearing stories about him for years about this. Said Ed Burke, who hopes the senators will abandon the proposal much the way the council formally cleared Mrs. O'Leary's cow at Burke's urging. You know who started that fire?
No.
A bunch of gamblers rolling dice. According to Mario Puzo's nonfiction book about Las Vegas.
Really?
Yes. Ness' career has always been imbued with a mix of fact and fiction. He did go after Capone, but his role was probably less heroic than many Americans imagine. Kind of like Wyatt Earp. I used to hear the same things about him.
So the movie's all fake?
Yeah, it's Hollywood.
That stinks.
Ness, Burke said, is a Hollywood myth, and to honor him would be a disservice to others. There are no signs the senators are considering backing down from a resolution to put Ness's name on the Federal Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosives headquarters. Capone believed that every man had his price, Senator Dick Durbin said earlier this month in a statement with fellow Illinois Senator Mark Kirk and Senator Sherrod Brown of Ohio.
Oh, what do they know? They weren't alive then.
But for Ness and his law enforcement team known as the Untouchables, no amount of money could buy their loyalty or sway their dedication to Chicago's safety. The ATF declined to comment on the issue. Judging by the agency's website, where Ness is the first entry in the history section, its support of Ness remains unwavering. Against all odds, he and his Untouchables broke the back of organized crime in Chicago, reads the agency of short biography of Elliot Ness. The author of an upcoming Ness biography has also weighed in, saying, while Ness was not involved with the income tax case that sent Capone to prison, he was a key figure in the broader battle against Capone in Chicago, and his contribution to law enforcement has been misunderstood and discounted for too long. Ness never claimed to have anything to do with the tax case on Capone, said Doug Perry, the author of The Untouchables. His job was to harass Capone's operation and squeeze his income stream, and they did just that. These facts are undisputed. After graduating from the University of Chicago, Ness was barely into his 20s when he took a job as a temporary prohibition agent in 1926. He quickly climbed through the ranks until, according to the ATF website, he put together a squad in 1930 to go after Capone's bootlegging operation, but prosecutors choose to pursue the gangster on tax charges instead. A few years later, Ness's law enforcement career took him to Cincinnati and Cleveland, where in 1933, he left his job to become, at just 33, the city's public safety director. He was also widely praised for cleaning up Cleveland's corruption. Oh, I didn't know about this. Ness ran unsuccessfully for Cleveland mayor in 1947. He died a decade later, but not long before co-writing a book about his exploits titled The Untouchables, a highly fictionalized account that made him uncomfortable, according to Perry. The problem, it seems, is that much of what we think we know about Ness comes from that book. The television show starring Robert Stack a half a century ago and Costner's portrayal of Ness in a 1987 movie. There is even suspicion that the virtuous character the public knows today may not be Ness at all, because Ness's co-author, Oscar Fraley, took the qualities ascribed to Ness from Elmer Ire, another famous lawman who played a key role in sending Capone to prison. This man I've never heard of.
Wow.
My guess is that Oscar Fraley stole all that from Elmer, his makeup, and gave it to Ness, said Paul Camacho, an IRS special agent in Las Vegas, who has made it his mission to rescue Ire's name from obscurity. He was a real American hero. By the time the story got to Hollywood, the goal was to tell a good story, not give a history lesson. Bob Fusel, a former IRS agent who knew Mike Malone, the inspiration for the Sean Connery character, in the movie said he did his own research of the intelligence until that conducted the tax evasion investigation and later became the IRS's criminal division. When he was a consultant on the film, he said, he told Costner that Ness had nothing to do with the tax evasion case and that the men who worked with Ness told stories about how he was afraid of guns. Elliot Ness. I told Kevin that Elliot Ness did not do any of this stuff. And Kevin said, Bob, this is Hollywood. We make it up as we go along. This is Costner.
Yeah.
Said Fussell.
Well, he's an actor.
Who was also the former the head of the Chicago Crime Commission. Costner did not respond to any of the emails from the Associated Press seeking comments.
No, because he likes the fact that he played that character.
Now, Jonathan Eig, author of Get Capone, the book Burke wants the senators to read, said that while Ness did investigate Capone's bootlegging activities in Chicago, none of what he discovered helped put Capone behind bars. There is also no evidence that Capone and his supposed nemesis ever met. So they never butted heads. My guess is that Al Capone never heard of Elliot Ness, he said, even after he went to jail.
Wow. Wow, that's so disillusioning because I really loved that movie and I thought it all really happened. That sucks.
Nash, you're more of a beat cop than I am.
Wait, what's the other thing that he says about the knife and the gun and all that other stuff?
No, I like the part when the guy walks into his house. He goes, isn't that just like a wop? Brings a knife to a gunfight.
Yeah,
I love it. Get out of here, you Diego bastard. And then the guy let him have it with the Tommy gun. He lured him outside.
That's a great movie. People should still see the movie.
It's entertainment, though.
It's a very good movie. Brian De Palma did
Isn't it movie. Amazing that Costner made a movie about Ness and Wyatt Earp, and both of their reputations are kind of...
There's a third one. What's the third movie?
With?
Who was the guy that investigated JFK's...
Oh, Jim Garrison.
Yep. And there's a lot of speculation. That's our word for the day. It's like Sesame Street. Today's word, our lecture company, is speculation about how true all that dramatization
and
is
he,
about
then
his life.
And he did that very good movie about the Cuban Missile Crisis that he played a fictional character.
Yeah.
Remember, he was like an aide or an aide to Jack and Bobby Kennedy mm-hmm. during the... It was called 13 Days.
Yeah, Kevin Costner made a lot of good
movies. It was one of his better movies that never got any kind of... I thought it was a very good picture.
Yeah, he made a lot of good movies. I like
him. And it didn't really get any press.
He's making some more movies now. So, this guy that I'm going to talk about is very real. He's real. And it was kind of chilling today. And
he's very scary.
And
yes.
He is scary. And really something strange happened to my computer, actually. So, I'm at work, and I really should be doing this at work, but I took a little break because I ate at my desk. I know.
That's right. Tell everybody online, dearest.
Who cares?
God forbid anybody listens.
No, I doubt anybody that works with me listens. And if they do, they're like, hooray. So anyway, so I generally speaking eat at my desk. So I said, you know what? I'm going to click on the Young Turks while I'm eating and working. So I put on the Young Turks, and Cenk Uygur is there, and he's talking about a journalist that was handpicked by Putin to be on their state TV news station, right? Because it's all state run, legitimately. Like here we have Fox News, it's kind of state run, but we don't officially say it is, but this is state run. This is Putin's news channel. So this Russian television anchor who was handpicked, and his name is, I hope I get it right, Dmitry Kiselyov. That's pretty close. So anyway, he gets on, and he has behind him a giant picture of a, as Condoleezza Rice would say, the mushroom cloud, a nuclear explosion. And it's like yellow and red. It's really menacing and scary. So that's behind him, and he's standing there talking in his suit. And he says, amongst other things, that Russia is the only country in the world capable of turning the USA into radioactive dust. Now, I know that we have some crazy people here that are on the TV. We do. We have a lot of crazy people spewing stupid things and ridiculous things. But this guy is not the same because he's handpicked by the actual leader of this country who's being very aggressive right now. So everything he's saying, I'm sure, is being told to him. You know, those are his talking points, and he's repeating them. And he also mentioned something else, a dead hand defense system, that we did some research, and they've been talking about this since the 90s, that they may have it. It's a defense system where if they want to, like, unleash bombs or nuclear bombs on us, wait a minute, and let's say the people that are going to do it are killed, that there's a mechanism that's going to, a defense system that's going to allow them to go off anyway, even though they're already dead, which is really scary.
Yeah, it's like the dead man's feature on a train. You know what it is? It's probably a lot of baloney. I mean, they probably have something like it.
They've been saying they've had it since the 90s.
They took possession of Russian submarines. They went inside, and these menacing Russian submarines, they were put together with spit, glue, and baling wire.
Well,
and if it's anything like these Russian submarines,
we don't know that. They've been talking about this, so I looked it up, Dead Hand, and they've been writing about this, New York Times, Post, people have been writing about this, that spies and people have said that this exists, that they do have this. But the fact that he's, you know, talking about, you know, we're going to make you radioactive dust and we can do it, with the aggressive, you know, actions right now from Putin to the Ukraine and him kind of thumbing his nose at us, just the fact that he has Edward Snowden in the country is thumbing his nose at us. This is not good news. This is the thing that people should be concerned about. I know the plane is a problem, but I feel like the plane is the wag the dog. You know, pay attention to this, don't pay attention to this, because I think this situation, and I cannot believe I'm going to say this, but when Mitt Romney mentioned Russia, we've mentioned this before in the debates for president, and we all laughed at him, right? We laughed at him, too.
Because somebody let slip, and then he let slip, because he's a big mouth.
Right, because they're briefed on certain things he's that the rest
mouth,
of us don't know.
He's a
motor
mouth, and he doesn't know when to shut up, and but he let it slip.
But our reaction was, my God, what is he, like, back in the 80s? Like, Russia's over. They're not a problem. And meanwhile, it looks like they are a problem.
Russia has always been a pain in the ass. They've had these feudal states for years. They had these crazy leaders, whether they be czars or premiers or whatever.
Yeah, they don't have a good history.
You had Ivan the Terrible. You had this great. You had that terrible. You had Rasputin. You had the Romanovs. 300 years, a country ruled by one family. And we ripped our hair out about two or three terms of Bush.
Yeah. I know.
The Romanovs ruled the 303 centuries of Romanovs.
That's like a nightmare. Imagine the Bushes for 300 years. Could that's longer than our country's been in existence. We haven't been in existence for that long. Well,
all right. Then you had Catherine the Great.
Well, John McCain is kind of freaking out right now because he can't believe in the Senate.
It's a matter of they run out of depends at the.
No, he's freaking out because the Republicans are talking about stupid things in the House on the Senate floor instead of talking about this situation. And he made a comment. I don't know where he was. He was on one of the shows over the weekend. And he said, look, Russia is a gas station masquerading as a country. I can't even believe he said that. It's a kleptocracy. It's corruption. It's a nation that's really only dependent on oil and gas for their economy. This is what he said. Because that is a problem, though, for Germany and a lot of Europe, because they do get a lot of their energy, gas, actually, from Russia through the Ukraine. So the Ukraine is kind of an important piece of the puzzle. And,
of course.
And Europe needs Russia. This is why the energy thing, you always say this to me. You always say, why are they going? Well, there must be some natural resource they're going for. If we would just be smart.
Yeah, Afghanistan, there's a shitload of mineral deposits they want.
Right. It's always something.
Lithium carbonate is one of them, which supposedly I think they said about cell batteries. And then they talk about, you know, the prescription market. They need these minerals right. to make these things.
So there's always a reason.
Of course.
That they want to go. It's not because of democracy or any of this other, you know, yeah, ideological.
The poor Ukrainian people.
No,
right?
No.
If you sat down with them, you couldn't even talk to them.
They have they could care less even almost about us, so they don't care about the Ukrainian people. It's always about energy. If we would use the things that are not tangible, intangible, like solar power and electric cars and all these things, we wouldn't have to worry
about
gas and oil.
The Russian people And I've read many, many of their writers, and they're all downers. I've never read a Russian novel with a happy ending. They're all very fatalistic. Dostoevsky, fate. I don't think Dostoevsky ever wrote an upbeat novel. Tolstoy was more upbeat.
Well, they have very depressing. It's not and a they're very, cheerful history.
And even Norman Mailer said it on Channel 13. He goes, the Russians are a very fatalistic people. And I'm, you know, not stealing his term, but he used another word. I'm just saying fatalistic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you read some of the Turgenev and Nikolai Gogol and Dostoevsky and Tolstoy and some of these other Russian writers, they may, if you're done reading them, you want to go out and get drunk. You're so depressed. This is how they think. That's what worries me about them, because they just don't, you know, life is just a burden for them. Everything is a burden.
Well, this guy took the soldiers that were, like, there for the Olympics. Were the Olympics in?
Sochi.
And he just turned around and he just started in with this. I mean, it was just, you know, we just did the Olympics, right? That's supposed to be a happy, you're supposed to be selling your country to everybody else so people want to come there. You know, it's a big commercial. He turns around, uses those
soldiers. To keep the people happy about, well, you know, the people are coming in and they're giving you money for business, and I did that for you, and
now go to war for me.
Exactly.
So now Crimea is part of Russia. Supposedly they had a vote. Who knows if it was like a valid, real, you know, genuine vote or not. But now Crimea is part of Russia. So how do you think these other countries, like, around Russia?
Honey, that's Russia. They're all broken up into little republics.
Right, but how do you think they feel? Do they feel vulnerable? What's in this guy's head? Nobody knows, right?
I don't really think they have the army to. People are going to have to be on their guard, and they better get their armies ready.
You know what? It just scares me because of this. Germany,
that includes Poland, that includes everything.
Well, this is what scares me. It scares me that this guy, Dmitry, is saying those things on the TV. And it scares me that on our side, people like Dick Cheney says, oh, military options
have
to be on
the table. He's another one. He's a lot of bluster like Khrushchev used to be.
I know, but bluster on our side and bluster on their side is just not a good thing for anybody. Not good at all. And this guy is, these people are very real. They're not, you know, fake, pumped up. This is really happening right now. And they're not lost like the plane. We know exactly where they are. And they're not retreating. It's a little bit scary.
So now we have a guy, what's his name, Dmitry? I'm going to start calling him Boris Badenov.
Why is that?
You don't remember Bullwinkle?
Yeah.
He was the villain.
Oh, he was the bad guy?
He was the little guy with the mustache.
What was the woman's name? Natasha. I liked her.
Jason Alexander played him in the movie, and then Rene Russo played her. And
I used to watch the cartoon.
Robert De Niro was fearless leader.
But I used to watch the actual cartoon.
All right, now that we've depressed of you, is enough.
Yeah, so now what we have to do is we would have
my
to
God,
get stoned.
Maybe I'm part Russian.
No. We'd have to get stoned, and then we would have
we would try Ben & Jerry's new core ice cream flavor.
Ooh!
Personally, I would call it hardcore.
Hardcore.
Okay. Now, you have three flavors to choose from. The first one is salted caramel. Caramel, excuse
me. That sounds good.
It's sweet ice cream with blonde brownies and a salted caramel core.
Yummy.
It, like, runs right down the middle of the ice cream.
We have to try
some of those
this.
Good humor bars I used to like. It was called the Chocolate Candy Crunch.
I think I had those. We were little kids, right?
Yeah, and I used to love those because they had the chocolate core around the stick, the melted chocolate, and it was hard, and you could eat after you're done eating the ice cream. It was like a little added goodie.
I love the ice cream, man.
So. Now, the second one is That's My Jam.
That's cute.
Chocolate and raspberry ice cream with a raspberry core.
Nice.
And this is the one I really like. I like the salted caramel. I'm going to try.
We're going to go get these this weekend.
Well, I already went looking.
Did you find them?
But you can't bring them home in the summer. We're going to have to, you know, get in there late at night and grab them.
And run.
And then run before the suckers melt. peanut butter fudge, which is chocolate and peanut butter ice cream with many peanut butter cups in a peanut butter fudge core.
You love that. That is a Tony special.
I would eat any one of these.
Yeah, they're good. We're going to have to go get those. So Ben and Jerry's, go to Colorado, get your doobie, and Plains Lost.
And I'd like to give a shout out to one of our listeners from the down-home state of Georgia. His name is William H.
Hey, William, what's going on?
And we got into a little discussion about my use of squeal like a pig.
Oh, that's right. You made a mistake, that's why.
I made a mistake. Well, William, I have to admit to you that I have actually never seen Deliverance from beginning to end. It is amazing. I know the movie is about, how old? It's about 40 years old.
A lot of truth tonight on the show.
40 years old. I've seen parts of it. I've seen the rape scene, I've seen the banjo scene, I've seen the bow and arrow.
Another cheerful subject matter. Okay,
but
tonight.
I've never seen it. So, I'm going to be honest with you, I have never seen it. I actually have it from Netflix now. I'm going to sit and watch it. I was always under the impression that the movie took place in the Appalachia region. I never knew this was set in Georgia.
And so Tony messed up. And he doesn't really mess up much, so...
So I have to, well, I never did really mention Georgia.
No, you didn't, but, you know, you alluded, as you would say.
Well, because everybody kids around about that squeal like a pig.
Right.
I think that's what that, basically what that movie's known for.
And we added a little banjo music because it's...
That crazy...
It's from the movie. Very famous. But listen, I promised I was going to do this the last time and I forgot, so I want to remember. Everybody knows Tony and I are animal lovers, especially cats. We have 3 cats. They're all rescue cats, Ricochet, Bon Bon, and Evita. And they all have Facebook pages, so you can like them. Now, there's a great group out in Staten Island, and a really nice gal, Dawn, is the one that runs this group. And it turns out that Dawn and her friends uncovered 70 cats that were abandoned by their caretaker, believe it or not. And when they found this out, they took matters into their own hands, and they made action, and they took care of the cats and did the right thing. They found a safe place to have, you know, keep them. They've been adopting them out, giving them medical care. They take donations. So I'm going to put their link about their story on our Facebook page, the Progressive Union, and I will also tweet it on Twitter. And if you would like to donate anything, even if it's $10, or if you live in Staten Island, you want to bring them some food or anything that would help the cats, or maybe you would like to adopt an adult cat or a kitten, they're all
awesome. With the adult cats.
Adult cats are easier.
Kittens are like bringing home a newborn baby.
Yeah, it's like having a baby. It really is true.
And when you have to get up at 4 a.m. in the morning to go to work.
It's not fun. No, it's true. We've already gone through it with Ricochet.
And I never want to go through it again.
It was tough. It's much easier an adult cat. If you're busy, if you have time for a kitten, you know, kittens need homes too. But if you don't have time, an adult cat is a wonderful cat to have. They have some feral cats, and they're looking for sanctuaries or maybe a barn for them, you know, a country barn where they need cats to, you know, eliminate the mice.
Chase the mices to pieces.
Yeah, absolutely. So they're looking for all these things. I'm going to, like I said, post it on our Facebook page so you can contact them. And if you want to help out, that would be great. That is our show for this evening. We are going to be doing more regularly now that the winter is over, thank goodness. And hopefully it starts getting warm and we have a great spring. I'm sure there'll be a lot of stories to report. You can again follow us
on... My listeners will love the fact how nasal I sound in the spring. Clarin D for
Tony,
two.
Yeah, Tony has a little sinus issue. We both do. But anyway, you can follow us on Twitter, Progressive U, like us on Facebook and join the conversation. Listen to us on iTunes and also on Third Strike Radio. Hi, Vinny. Shows on demand. And go to our website and listen to us at theprogressiveunion.com. Thanks for joining us, and we'll be with you next time.
Everybody must get stoned.
Hey, man, what a terrible dream. I am parched. That's better. I could use another one of those. That's one heck of a nurse.